The ancient story of Achilles reveals a pattern that resonates through millennia. Parents will make desperate gambles to protect their children, yet can never fully shield them from fate. When my son was born during the 2009 H1N1 pandemic, I crossed into a realm of fear I hadn't previously known. Suddenly, ordinary objects could kill, and paranoia felt entirely normal. Lead paint, water contaminants, and even stagnant air joined influenza on my growing list of threats. As the pandemic intensified, a central question among mothers, would we vaccinate our children? Heated debates raged in playgroups and online forums long before the H1N1 vaccine was available. Our language around vaccination reveals our deepest anxieties. We call it a shot or jab, framing it as violence. Throughout history, vaccination has triggered fears of permanent marking, from the mark of the beast in the 19th century to modern fears of autism and immune dysfunction. Where our ancestors feared organic contamination, like blood of bats, today we fear chemicals, the frickin' mercury, the aluminum. What's striking is how these fears persist despite overwhelming evidence of safety. We're caught in a paradox where the success of vaccines makes the diseases they prevent seem less threatening than the vaccines themselves. Vaccination serves as banking of immunity, where contributions protect those unable to develop immunity themselves. Herd immunity prevents disease circulation throughout populations. Our protection extends beyond our skin. The honeybee hive metaphor captures our reality better than herd immunity. We are interdependent creatures whose individual health depends on collective well-being. Like bees solving problems together, human collectives achieve what individuals cannot. When wealthier people vaccinate their children, they help protect vulnerable children whose circumstances prevent full vaccination, inverting historical patterns where the poor served the privileged. Yet many believe public health measures aren't for people like us, revealing how class and race shape perceptions of medical interventions. The overlooked truth in vaccination debates: immunity is never purely individual. Your protection becomes my protection. My vulnerability affects yours. We exist in a web of mutual dependence that no privilege can fully escape. My preschool-aged son came home with a pipe cleaner germ and new knowledge. Germs are really, really tiny and really, really dirty. The word germ has dual meanings, both disease-causing organisms and parts capable of building new tissue, the same word for illness and growth. Modern science shows we need germs. Without exposure, a child's immune system becomes dysfunctional. Viruses fascinate me. Not quite alive, they're parasitic entities that hijack cells to reproduce. Much of our genome contains ancient viral material now essential for survival, including genes crucial for placenta formation and immunity. As science writer Carl Zimmer notes, there is no us and them. Unlike antibacterial products that kill indiscriminately, vaccines present limited exposure with significant advantages. Yet vaccine fears persist despite evidence showing benefits far outweigh risks. Serious side effects remain rare. Encephalitis occurs in 1 in 1,000 measles cases, but only 1 in 3 million MMR vaccine doses. What if we reimagined our relationship with microbes not as a battlefield, but as a complex ecosystem requiring balance? This perspective shift might help us make more rational decisions about hygiene and vaccination. We don't fear what statistically poses the greatest danger. We fear sharks, while mosquitoes kill far more people, overestimating dramatic dangers while underestimating common threats. When information contradicts our beliefs, we doubt the information rather than ourselves. We accept certain risks because perceived benefits outweigh statistical dangers, creating patterns of paranoia and neglect where minimal risks receive excessive attention while pressing threats go ignored. People assess chemical risks differently than experts. Toxicologists understand the dose makes the poison, while laypeople categorize substances as either entirely safe or dangerous. We apply a law of contagion, assuming any exposure to harmful chemicals permanently contaminates us. Alternative medicine addresses these anxieties with appealing language, offering cleanses when we feel polluted and detoxification when fearing toxins. Most appealing is natural, implying medicine untroubled by human limitations. Vaccines occupy that liminal space between humans and nature, a domestication of wild things still dependent on the body's natural response. Vaccination originated in folk medicine, not laboratories. 18th century English milkmaids who contracted cowpox gained smallpox immunity, a connection Edward Jenner formalized by transferring pus from a milkmaid's blister to a boy, establishing immunity. This breakthrough preceded virus identification and germ theory by a century. The practice evolved from variolation, deliberate infection with mild smallpox to prevent severe disease, practiced for centuries in China and India. Cotton Mather learned this from his Libyan slave, Onesimus, and advocated for it during a 1721 Boston epidemic, facing fierce opposition, including a firebomb through his window. Our understanding of immunity remains metaphor-dependent. Anthropologist Emily Martin found military metaphors dominate, with publications depicting the body as the scene of total war between ruthless invaders and determined defenders. Alternative medicine offers different frameworks, from balance to symphonies and solar systems. Surprisingly, the term immune system wasn't used until 1967, when immunologist Niels Juhrn united all immunity components into one comprehensive system. Walking with my toddler through a cemetery, I was struck by his innocent "hi" greetings to marble statues of children who had died in the 1890s. By 1900, 1 in 10 children died before their first birthday, a stark contrast to today's expectation of child survival. This awareness haunted me when my son developed croup, a condition that once might have been fatal diphtheria. Voltaire wrote in 1733 about Circassia women who had, from time immemorial, inoculated their infants against smallpox by introducing pustules through incisions, driven by maternal love. Medical care was primarily women's domain then, though female healers faced increasing threats from physicians and the church. While women were executed for healing during witch hunts, university-trained physicians studied classical texts but learned little about actual bodies. Female healers used effective plant-based treatments like ergot and belladonna, with figures like Saint Hildegard of Bingen cataloging medicinal plants, while physicians often relied on prayers. Our privilege of forgetting what it means to live with deadly childhood diseases may be precisely what enables vaccine hesitancy to flourish. The myth of Narcissus serves as both metaphor for immunology's self-recognition concept and warning against self-absorption. Traditional immunology oversimplifies by viewing the immune system as merely discriminating between self and non-self. Our bodies contain more microbial cells than human ones, beneficial microbes that aid digestion, synthesize vitamins, and prevent harmful bacterial colonization. We exist in mutual dependence with these microorganisms. Scientists now envision fighting disease by nurturing beneficial bacteria rather than simply eliminating harmful ones, tending our body's microbial garden instead of waging war. Life itself is a window of vulnerability. Our permeable bodies reveal our fundamental interconnectedness. Our immunity is collective, not merely individual. Vaccination becomes participation in our shared biological community, acknowledging that we cultivate this garden together.